Welcome to the very first episode of Software Gone Wild, a podcast focusing on real-life SDN, NFV, and software-defined data center solutions, architectures, and products that have a fighting chance of working outside of PowerPoint. I'm Ivan Pipelnyak, and you might know me from my blog at ipspace.net. And with me today are Luke Gorey, the SnapSwitch author, and Simon Leinen, a SnapSwitch early adopter and OpenStack guru from Switch, the Swiss academic network. How are you today, guys?
Very well, thank you very much.
Fine, thanks.
So what are you doing these days?
These days I'm doing open source software for ISPs and other network operators. So this is the area that I see as having the most kind of explosive action in the few years to come.
Okay, Luke, so the first time we got in contact, it was about the SnapSwitch. Is that still your focus, or are you diversifying into whatever networking solutions the ISPs are looking for?
So I'm working on SnapSwitch specifically. The idea is to make this into a big part of the networking landscape in the years to come. We're trying to kind of develop something like an Nginx, but for Ethernet traffic, a Swiss Army knife tool that you can pull out when you have a crazy networking design on the whiteboard and you need to write a little bit of scripting code to execute it in the network.
Sounds great. And Simon, what are you doing?
For the past 15 years, I've been backbone engineer for the Swiss Academic Network Switch AS559, but since a reorganization 3 years ago, I had a group that now tries to build cloud infrastructure, IaaS services and so on for the Swiss academic community. So we're looking a lot into OpenStack and also storage technologies such as Ceph. And it's mostly in relation with OpenStack that I've become very interested in powerful switching solutions such as SnapSwitch. There's also some interest at my former group, the Backbone people, for using SnapSwitch for exciting things, and maybe we can talk about that later.
Oh, that would be great. Now, we've been mentioning the SnapSwitch for I don't know how many times. So Luke, what is the SnapSwitch?
So SnapSwitch is an open source application for processing Ethernet traffic. So the idea is it's kind of like a little Cisco iOS that runs on Linux, has all of its code on GitHub, and can drive 10 gig interfaces at line rates, and it doesn't make too many assumptions about what you want to do with your traffic. The assumption is that you're going to take a whiteboard and come up with some kind of crazy things that you want to do in your network that make sense to you, and you're going to need some convenient way to implement that in such a way that you can really deploy it and run it. And that's what SnapSwitch is supposed to help you with.
So it's more like a framework than a real product.
So it has a basis that is really a framework that is supposed to be quite general. But at the same time, any decent framework is kind of always developed together with one or more serious applications. And that's what we're doing here. So we have a generic framework, but this year there's a couple of kind of products being built on it. And the one that I'm focused on is a network functions virtualization system for OpenStack Neutron.
Okay, so we have this framework, and you are working on the Neutron solution using this framework. What are the other people working on?
So that's Simon's mates, right?
As I said, my colleagues in the network group have started to prototype an application that would implement layer 2 VPNs, so Ethernet over IP, which solves a problem that they currently see. So Switch offers a layer 2 VPN, an Ethernet VPN service. It is quite popular with some universities who want to connect remote campuses with each other over our network. And so for a few years, we have been offering that. And in order to do that, we had to implement MPLS in our backbone, which we didn't previously have because we saw no need for it. And my colleagues thought that it would be better to have a separate device that could just use the normal IP backbone. Unfortunately, our routers do not support Ethernet over IP encapsulation natively in hardware. So we thought it would be more effective to have an external box that does just this very simple encapsulation decapsulation of Ethernet and IP and the little control plane work that's necessary on top. And then we could just use an arbitrary simple IP network like we always had as the transport fabric. And my colleague Alex Gall is now implementing this on top of SnapSwitch, and although there was a learning curve for getting to grips with the infrastructure based on just-in-time compilers and so on, and getting that to work with good performance, I think he has been quite happy with that platform. So it's exactly what Luke said. It should enable you to do arbitrary, crazy networking stuff from scratch in a nice environment. So this is something that is running in our labs now, and I hope that we see this implemented with real production traffic soon over the next months.
There's one more product that's worth mentioning, which is our little load generator. This is actually probably the simplest thing and that would be most immediately useful to people. So we've got a little load generator that can use pretty negligible amounts of CPU resources, a fraction of a core, to generate several hundred million packets per second on a normal PC, blasting traffic out of 10 gig mix from a PCAP file as a source. So it's easy to forget because it seems so simple, but that's actually something that probably solves a real problem for a lot of people. And I know that there are some interesting companies using that behind the scenes at the moment too.
So you are sort of competing with Spirent and Ixia.
I would say we're not competing with them in a product sense. We're trying to give regular people the capacity to do it yourself, what they need, instead of buying it from suppliers, you know, if they can.
And this product, as you mentioned, would take a PCAP file and just play it back as fast as it can.
Right. So it basically loads a PCAP file into the network card and then puts the network card into a loop using a little hack on the driver so that the CPU can kind of just sit back and relax. And you can let your hundreds of gigabits of PCI bandwidth in a regular server just do the work for you.
So it's not stateful. You're not actually tracking the state of TCP sessions, for example. You're just replaying the traffic that has been recorded previously.
Right.
I mean, it's still perfect. At hundreds of gigs, that's great.
Yeah, so the idea is not to go out and take over the market for load generators. The idea is just to make hacks like this possible so that when you have something you need to do, like blast traffic at tremendous rates in some strange way at a network device, you can just go ahead and do it.
Now, one thing that always sort of interested me, how did you decide it's time to write a switch? When did you wake up and say, well, today I'll start coding a switch?
Good question. My background has been building networking products for the past 15 years or something like that. And you do a lot of the same things over and over again in different companies and for different products. And I've always been involved in open source, but there's been a big divide, I would say, with networking companies and the vendors doing a lot fancier programming, actually, than a lot of the stuff that you find in open source. You've got a lot of people selling shiny networking boxes that can do cool things at ridiculous traffic loads, and the engineering is just very interesting and not well represented in the open source world. And I think it's time to change that. I think there are a lot of cool tricks that people have figured out in the networking world, and it's time to do this in an open source way and kind of share the fun a little bit and build a kind of an infrastructure that myself and others can then use in the future when we're building products, instead of kind of doing everything from scratch all the time.
So you effectively said the open source networking based on Linux TCP stack is semi-broken, let's do it better.
Yeah, so a part of it is that, and another part is that it's also an idea whose time has come. So this is something that's going to happen in the coming years, absolutely. So it's an exciting thought to try and be a big part of that.
Oh, another crazy question. Where did you get the name?
So snab is a Swedish word. Swedish is the language that I speak at home, and snab means quick, which seemed apt.
So it's a quick switch, but snap switch sounds so much better.
Exactly.
And why did you decide to open source it? I mean, there would be startups that would do this same thing and then hope to be acquired for $1 billion or $1.5 billion.
So I think you can have a bigger impact with open source. I think if you look at the impact of Linux particularly, and compare that with a startup that got bought up for $1 billion or $500 million or something like that, it's a much, much bigger impact on the Linux side. So not that I'm a monk or anything like that, I consciously decided that impact is what I'm trying to achieve. And once you make that decision, it's obvious that you should be doing open source rather than trying to do it as a startup and position yourself as a threat to big players and all of that kind of thing.
Well, what can I say? Thank you. We all appreciate that. Now, where are we now with the snap switch? Is it production ready? Is anyone using it in production? Can I use it if I want it?
So now it's a kind of a race to put the first system into production. So there's nothing running in production now, but there will be at least two different production products on it by the end of the year. So right now it's quite good as a toolkit for implementing something. If you have a network element that you want to develop, then you should be considering SnapSwitch as a basis for it. But you would be an early adopter this year. So next year is when we'll be able to point you at deployments and experience reports and that kind of thing.
And I guess since this whole thing is open source, I can just download it and start using it.
You can indeed. Everything is on GitHub and it compiles in less than 1 minute. So away you can go.
And if I would download it, what do I get on top of the framework? So do I get anything that I can just start using, like maybe a simple learning bridge or something?
So you will get the load generator. Mm-hmm. And the included with the distribution now, you get the OpenStack implementation. This is an implementation of switching, firewalling, a little quality of service, some tunneling, and the features that we're developing for network functions virtualization. So that is all included in the base toolkit at the moment.
So if I download it today, I get an alternative to Open vSwitch in OpenStack networks automatically.
Yeah, although this is something that we're developing in parallel with the OpenStack Juno, which is going to be released around September. So what you really get is the opportunity to help us develop this rather than something you can deploy right now.
Yeah, so you would need the Juno code to run this, which means that you have to download a development copy of OpenStack, right?
Yes, but it also means that we really... So right now we're hacking away like maniacs, doing all of the debugging and optimization and all of that kind of thing to make this something deployable. So that's kind of what we're up to this summer and this autumn. So when you check stuff out, you're getting an alpha copy. You're not getting something that's a 1.0 yet.
And on the other hand, if I want to do some crazy stuff of mine, like one of my customers would like to do layer 2, layer 3 filtering between containers in the data center and the backbone, for which the SnapSwitch might be an ideal use case, how can I extend it?
The main way that we extend it is with the scripts written in Lua.
So what's Lua?
So Lua is a really, really simple little programming language that made its start in video games and has become kind of popular in Nginx, which is a kind of Swiss Army knife of HTTP. So it's a little scripting language that it's a pretty similar to Python or something like that. And the way that we use it is to just run scripts directly in the data plane and just-in-time compile them so that they go fast.
So for the networking people, I think it's also used in Wireshark for extensions and also on the OpenWRT routers to code the GUIs. So it's a fairly common embedded scripting language.
So is the tickle for the 21st millennium?
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay. And you already have the framework, if I understood correctly, so that I can just insert my Lua scripts in the data path. I don't have to deal with the low-level stuff.
That's right. We have a little framework that lets you do a little black box that takes Ethernet in from one or more channels and ships Ethernet out from one or more channels. And you can wire that up to other processing elements that already exist. So, for example, we have a little black box that represents a 10 gigabit Ethernet interface, an Intel NIC. And that can drive the NIC at line rate and ship packets in and out to your little script. And we also have a similar thing that drives I/O through VertIO net into KVM virtual machines. And we actually have extended QMU with a really fast user space I/O interface for Ethernet, which is just going mainline in QMU version 2.1 now. So we have a bunch of these kind of I/O interfaces for talking with the outside world. Then we also have a bunch of other existing processing elements like a packet filter and a traffic rate limiter and IPv6, Ethernet over IPv6 tunnel and these kind of things. So you can wire those up together into some configuration. And if you can't find everything that you want, you can write a script that creates a new function, which is what you want, and tie that in with what's already there.
Ah, so it's not just the framework. You are also giving me not just the base plate, but also a number of different Lego bricks that I can put together any way I wish. And if I get the results, that's fine. Otherwise, I have to pour my own Lego brick.
That's exactly right. So it's kind of similar to Linux in that sense. You know, Linux gives you some pretty cool Lego bricks, like IP tables and routing and bridging and EB tables and all of that kind of thing. And I think Snap Switch is kind of similar, but we try to make it much, much easier and a lower barrier of entry to creating your own bricks. So writing Lua scripts is supposed to be one order of magnitude easier than kernel programming.
Yeah, particularly because your framework is smaller than the whole Linux kernel, so there are not so many things to take care of, right?
Right. So we take this really seriously, trying to keep the whole thing simple enough that a normal human being could actually hold the whole thing in their head. So from the outset of the project, we've limited the whole thing to a maximum of 10,000 lines of code, which is reasonably aggressive, I would say. So our entire from scratch 10 gigabit Ethernet driver is about 850 lines. So that's 8.5% of our code budget spent on that. So we spend a lot of time thinking about how we can do things in a really, really simple, minimalistic way so that people actually have a chance to understand what we're doing rather than generating millions of lines of code that no one will ever get their head around.
By the way, you mentioned Intel NIC a number of times now. What hardware does SnapSwitch run on? What's the required hardware that I need to have in my, obviously, Intel box?
So right now, the assumption is that you're using an Intel CPU, typically a Xeon, and you're using some kind of an Intel network card. So we focus on the Intel 82599, which is a 10 gigabit NIC. We also have some support for some 1 gig NICs, and we're going to add support for the 40 gig NIC when it comes just around the corner. So today, that's the state of things. And from my perspective, it's not a goal in itself to go out and support every network card everywhere. I think when you're building networking products for production use, you should be choosing the hardware to suit the software. You don't just go out and buy some random hardware and then expect the software to work on it. But having said that, we are looking into adding support for one or two more network cards during the course of this year. And what I look for in new network cards is a capability that it gives me that I didn't have before. So it's not so interesting to just be able to do the same thing from a different vendor, but it is very interesting if the hardware can do something cool that we can then make available to application programmers to exploit in their programs.
So effectively, if you'll find something that gives you more functionality than the Intel NIC you're interested, if it's just different, then you don't care.
That's basically right, yeah. And I think a lot of people coming from a Linux background kind of expect that it's virtuous to try and support every network card everywhere, because that's kind of how Linux evolved, with hobbyists installing it on their computer at home and getting into development by writing a driver. And that's kind of cool and everything, but it's not really the priority. I see it as each network card has to have a value proposition saying why it's worth spending a part of our very closely guarded code budget on supporting that NIC.
Makes perfect sense. Now, you mentioned OpenStack a few times. So it looks like you will have a Neutron plugin that will be sort of functionally equivalent to the Open vSwitch Neutron plugin, right?
To a first approximation, I would put it another way. We're developing a network functions virtualization backend for OpenStack, and we have kind of taken a knife and said that a certain subset of features are what we want to support in a very good way, and another subset of features are more, what should I say? What was the question? Equivalent to Open vSwitch.
Yeah, a Neutron plugin.
So we're actually developing an OpenStack Neutron plugin, which is not trying to be equivalent to all of the others, actually. We're trying to focus really closely on a really specific use case and push to one side all of the features that don't really support that. And I'd say it's led us to do things a bit differently. So what we focus on is the network functions virtualization problem. That is that you have a bunch of network equipment that you want to throw away and replace with virtual machines. And the big difference that I see, the thing that's quite peculiar to the way we're looking at this, is that we assume that you have a network that you have designed that you like and that you want to connect your virtual machines to in a very kind of streamlined and efficient way. So this is contrary to the network virtualization approach, where you basically assume that the network is really crappy and it's not under your control. There's somebody else that owns it and it's never going to do what you want. So what you're trying to do is overlay a new network over the top of it. That's also kind of a very interesting problem, but it's not the one that we're focusing on. We're focusing on the problem of connecting virtual machines to your network that you like and that you've designed and that you want them to be on.
So effectively, you will assume that the network provides all the network virtualization that you might ever need, be it in a VLAN form or whatever other form, And you are providing the glue, the high-performance glue that will link the virtual machines with this already existing network.
That's right. So our target user is actually pretty specific. It's somebody who would really like to deploy the hardware virtualization that you can get these days. You know, nowadays, network cards and PCs can do a kind of a hardware virtualization where every VM gets direct access to a network card, which is actually pretty neat. And it's performant and it's simple and it gets them onto the network. And I think it's a lot of people who would benefit from using this, except that it's just a bit too limited in certain ways. So if you use hardware virtualization, one problem is that you're exposing the hardware that you have to all of your VMs. So if you ever want to buy a different network card, you're going to have to negotiate with everybody who's supplying you with VMs to support that, because they're all going to see what you have, which is a big disadvantage compared with the abstract virtio interface that's more common in virtualization. Another problem is that if you use hardware virtualization, you can't do any networking functionality except what's supported in hardware by the NIC, which is usually pretty limited. So if you would want to do a little bit of extra packet filtering for security, or if you would want to have some kind of encapsulation for certain ports, if you want to have kind of a management port that is tunneled, those are things that you can't do if you are using the hardware virtualization. So we are trying to just correct those relatively simple limitations. So we use all of the hardware virtualization features. So we make the NIC do all of the switching. We make it do as much as it can of quality of service and packet filtering and that kind of thing, up to the limits of the hardware. And then on top of that, we just implement everything that's missing. So we convert all of the traffic to virtio into VMs in a zero-copy way, which I don't think anybody else is doing at this stage. And we make sure that the packet filtering and the QoS and the tunneling gives you the full OpenStack Neutron abstraction rather than just the subset that the hardware can handle directly.
Now, when you mentioned zero copying, that's important because you're not shuffling the same packet around memory a number of times and losing performance that way, right?
Right. So it's a bit of a difference, I would say, between the kind of the enterprise and the service provider worlds. In the service provider world, people are much more conservative about performance. You kind of want to know the minimum performance you can expect. You know, how many packets per second will this handle if I bombard it in this certain way? So that you can kind of make plans around it, because all of your hardware requirements tend to be driven by your networking workloads. So what we're trying to do is to give robust and predictable performance. So when we say that we can do a certain number of packets per second, we want it to not matter how big the packets are, for example.
Now that you mentioned performance, can you give us any performance numbers? So how many packets per second or how many gigabits per second can a snap switch switch?
So when you talk about the basic I/O layer, then we basically think about mapping a 10 gig port onto a CPU. So we normally provision one core for one port, and then the question is, what can you do on that port with that CPU? So if all you're doing is transmitting and receiving packets, the last time we measured it was about 25 nanoseconds per packet for the basic I/O, so that's more than you need for line rate. But then when you need to actually do something interesting, it's another story, of course, because as soon as you start doing any kind of interesting processing, you're in this fight to defend your packet rate from disappearing into memory accesses and branch mispredictions and all of that kind of thing. So I think the best that I can say is that the IO interfaces are ridiculously fast, and that just gives you the chance to defend as much performance as you can as an application programmer.
And when you talk about line rate, it's line rate at TCP SYN packet sizes, not at 1500 byte packet sizes, right?
Right. So for the basic I/O interface, we have a CPU to spare if we're doing small packets. And I think that this is the price of entry these days in an I/O interface. I don't think you can be taken very seriously unless you can do at least 10 million packets per second on that level. And then the interesting frontier is what speeds can you do once you actually start doing something interesting?
Oh, by the way, it looks to me like there is another product out there that can achieve approximately the same speeds, and it's Intel's DPDK and anything that anyone builds on top of that. So how would you compare SnapSwitch to Intel's DPDK?
So DPDK is a kind of a fantastic thing, I think. It's a kind of a brilliant bit of engineering where Intel have come out and demonstrated to the world what networking vendors kind of knew behind the scenes, which is that x86 boxes can do ridiculously more traffic than what people think when they just play around with Linux routers and that kind of thing. I say the DPDK is a fantastic bit of software, and it's kind of solving a different problem than what we are. So DPDK has solved a really important problem, which is for all of the people developing network elements for x86 who have hit a kind of a performance ceiling with kernel-based programs where they get killed handling interrupts and all of that kind of thing. And what they say is now you can just port your application over to the DPDK and all of those performance bottlenecks disappear. So what DPDK gives you is extremely fast I/O and memory management and this kind of thing. It's a kind of a set of primitives that we maybe even will adopt ourselves someday. At the moment, it corresponds to the kind of I/O and memory management parts of SnapSwitch. And then we are kind of trying to build a higher level application. And I think DPDK is more niched as a set of primitives.
Okay, so if I understood correctly, the things that are in DPDK, you have something equivalent in SnapSwitch, but then you are building more on top of that.
Right. So SnapSwitch is really an application, and DPDK is a low-level framework. And it would be entirely valid for SnapSwitch to use DPDK, although that's not the way that we're going so far.
Now, speaking about application-level functionality, so if we go back to the Neutron plugin, there are all sorts of APIs in Neutron. Some are mandatory, some are optional. Which ones of them do you plan to support?
To a first approximation, I'd say that we support the layer 2 functions and not the layer 3 functions. The actual feature list that we're implementing is provider networks, so that you can take a VM and patch it onto some VLAN of some port of a switch or a router somewhere. Security groups, which is a simple ingress and egress packet filtering mechanism. Quality of service, which is particularly important for the NFV, because you might be provisioning a VM to process a specific amount of traffic, and then you want to make sure it has enough bandwidth. And we're doing some tunneling so that you can create soft wires between Ethernet ports on remote machines. And then what we do not implement, things like all of the NATing and even DHCP and this kind of thing. So we see this as something that you take care of on the network rather than something that is provided to you by Neutron.
So is it fair to say that your solution would be more geared toward the service provider environments that are looking for performance, whereas Open vSwitch would be more geared toward the enterprise environments that are looking for features?
It's an interesting question. So I would say that Open vSwitch is a half of the puzzle. So if people deploy Open vSwitch, so Open vSwitch is a software implementation of an OpenFlow switch. And what you need to make it do something is an OpenFlow controller or something OpenFlow-like. So a very well-known one is the Nisira, which is now VMware NSX, for example. So there are a lot of products out there which I do think are mostly enterprise-focused, which use an Open vSwitch for the traffic and then have another system which kind of plugs in all the smarts to make it really do something. Historically, there hasn't really been much of this in the open source realm. So within OpenStack itself, there is something called the Open vSwitch plugin, but it's mostly using IP tables and EB tables and other Linux features rather than Open vSwitch. And the new contender now is the Open Daylight project, which is attempting to be basically an open source alternative to all of those commercial network virtualization systems.
Now, if for whatever crazy reason we know that some customers just can't decide, you want to have both SnapSwitch and Open vSwitch in the same OpenStack cloud. Is that possible?
Yes. So it's possible in principle, at least. So this multi-plugin stuff is not covered by the normal OpenStack test suites, but the design supports this. So these days with Neutron, you can run multiple plugins and drivers and map different ports to different ones. So you should be able to nominate for a particular port of a particular VM which switch is going to handle that.
And you are talking about ML2 framework, right?
Right. So OpenStack started off with about 10 completely different implementations of networking, and then it's in each release kind of coming closer together. So these days there's a framework called ML2, which lets you combine quite a lot of stuff together in a pretty neat way. And this is getting kind of iterated in every release. So I think that that's quite a realistic and practical setup these days.
Oh, we are looking for some interesting times. Now, the last question. If I'm really interested after this half-hour conversation and want to learn more about SnapSwitch, where can I learn more about it?
So there are two main hubs of activity, I would say. One is our mailing list, which is called SnapDevel, which you can find linked from our GitHub page if you search for SnapSwitch. The other, within the OpenStack context, is the new Network Functions Virtualization subgroup within OpenStack. So we are kind of very involved there now, and there is a lot of activity. So that is a great place to jump in and get involved with the project, too.
And I guess from those two starting points, there will also be some download links that you can use to download the code and start playing with it.
That's right. So GitHub has everything. If you find our GitHub page, you will find everything from there.
Yeah, and I'll put them in the show notes so that people can just click and start playing. Now, if I really have too much time and I want to play with SnapSwitch and I want to contribute back, how can I join the project?
I would say that the first step is to jump on the SnapDevel mailing list and see what's going on. So we're actually trying to build not just software, but also a community of people who do implement networking functions. So an important part of the project is actually having people who are interested and capable of troubleshooting things. So you can jump on and see what people are working on, what kind of problems people are looking into, what kind of functionality they're implementing, and take a look and throw in some ideas and get involved.
Fantastic. Now, the final question. Where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you, and what are your plans for the upcoming weeks?
You can find me as well on the SnapDevel mailing list or as luke@snap.co. And for the coming weeks, I'm doing a lot of hacking, but I'm also planning to go to Paris in the first week of July for the NFV sprint for OpenStack, which is going to be hosted by Innovace. So that's still coming together at the moment, but it would be quite neat to meet up with people there. I think it's 2nd to 4th of July.
And Simon, where can people find you and what are your plans?
People can find me on simon.linen at switch.ch. It's my professional address. Or if you're near the Zurich main station, send me mail and we'll have a cup of coffee here. We're pretty centrally located. For the next few weeks, I'll be very busy with my team to build up these OpenStack facilities that we would like to offer to the Swiss academic community. We have two locations now in Lausanne and Zurich with racks of equipment, a few. And yeah, that will take us quite a bit of effort to get them deployed to a usable state using OpenStack and so on, especially given the networking problems.
So are you planning to use SnapSwitch in that deployment or not yet?
Not yet. So we're trying to follow the normal deployment guides, but I see that the network functionality in the typical OpenStack clouds are kind of limited. Like, we have many other groups around us building OpenStack clouds, IaaS offerings, and they all use very basic networking. For one thing, it's always IPv4 only, which is something I kind of feel very bad about because my organization has always been a good supporter of IPv6, and I don't want to come out with something new that only supports V4, but that seems to be the state of the art in OpenStack. But there are other things as well that we would like to leverage. For example, one thing going forward that we would like to offer our customers would be some kind of virtual private cloud solution where not just individuals like researchers, but also IT organizations inside the universities could run a few VMs in our cloud and have them somehow tunneled back to their corporate networks so that they appear on the right side of the firewall. And that is clearly something that OpenStack and Neutron could support, but the integration seems to be kind of difficult these days, especially if you want to rely on open source parts. I know that there are systems like NSX or probably Mitakura that will probably get you very far with this, but of course it will be very nice to have an open source alternative, and SnapSwitch seems to fit quite well, and I'm very happy that people are working on this NFV front and making good progress there. And why should that not be possible to generalize to other types of OpenStack deployments? So I have great hopes that if the other deployment options don't work out well, then we could always build it ourselves using SnapSwitch, right?
This definitely sounds exciting. So when you have something close to production, let me know and we'll do another session covering that.
Okay.
By the way, are you guys blogging? Are you anywhere on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. I'm Luke Go, LukeGo, on Twitter. And I'm doing a lot of posts on the Snab mailing list. And I'm not blogging, but I know that I should be.
Yes, you should. Simon?
I'm Simon L on Twitter, but you won't find much interesting because we're so busy with this deployment. I hope once we dig ourselves out of that, then I can do some blogging. I also have a blog on blog.simon.linen.ch, but it's similarly out of date, so don't even go there yet.
So you're too busy with real life to spend time on Twitter or
Sorry about that.
That's fine.
Someone has to do it.
Of course. So thanks very much for joining me today, Luke and Simon. And I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and you can find me at ipspace.net and follow me on Twitter as @iOSHints. And you'll find the show notes for this podcast, including all the links that Luke has mentioned, at podcast.ipspace.net, where you can also subscribe to this podcast. If you need more information on SDN and NFV, visit ipspace.net/SDN, where you'll find a number of SDN-related podcasts, webinars, workshops, and who knows, you just might decide that what you really need is a webinar subscription. Finally, if you like the show, do tell a friend or leave a review on iTunes. And don't forget that you can subscribe to the podcast at podcast.ipspace.net.